Right about here, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to get yourself and your soul together.
Somebody's gonna get him, and somebody's gonna get him foot.
Hey, boy! Hey, boy!
It's a very, very personal meeting.
Oh! And what the hell kind of description is that?
This man will make your bladder splatter.
You ain't nothing! Okay?
Does go well with it.
Damn shame how they screwed up your show. Nice little program. Not that I ever watched it.
Yes!
Hello, everybody. My name is Jim Shear, and tonight, Yin's Love Breaking Bad, Season 5, Episode 15, titled Granite State. And joining us for a third time, Breaking Bad superfan and media specialist, Austin Breslow.
Hello, Jim.
You three-timer, you.
I am, I believe, the first three-timer.
First, yes, you are the first three-timer. We actually tried to get you last week, but you were you were in different time zones.
I was in different time zones traveling, but that was probably one of the best episodes of television ever.
So quickly, what did you think of last week's episode?
Oh my God! Well, I would have said it was the most depressing hour of my life, but then I watched this week's episode and I think that sets the cake.
Really? Because I thought last week was darker than this week.
I don't know. Maybe it was because I watched the Emmys last night and then I watched Breaking Bad, so it got to be pretty late in the night, and I think I had a lot of time late at night to think about it, and it just depressed me. But the amazing thing about last week's episode is that when I was talking to people about it, I would say, like, the first 20 minutes were unbelievable. It was a work of art. And then the last 20 minutes were just the best 20 minutes of Breaking Bad ever. And that's the whole episode. It's only 40 minutes without commercials. So literally the entire thing, beginning to end, was amazing. The first 20 take place out in the desert in Tahajali and with Hank's death, as your viewers or listeners know at this point. And then the last 20 are just a mad dash to the finish line for Walt. And he ends up leaving. And just every detail was so, so brilliant. And I loved it. It was amazing. But this week was different because it was, at least last week, you were still angry with Walt and his brother-in-law is killed and his family's put in danger and found out by the police, and at least you can be mad at him. This week you're back to feeling like he is just completely helpless, and truly this is the point where we've seen that everything he's worked for is completely gone. Jesse's completely helpless, so that's why for me it was just so, so hard to watch, because you feel bad for them. You can't blame them being the victims that they are at this point. But they got themselves into it. It's just such a tragedy at this point. It was so unsettling, but a great episode nonetheless.
And all the pieces are in place for next week. And I can't believe I'm saying this. That will be the final episode of Breaking Bad, and it's going to be it's going to be the fastest hour of TV. I'm going to be watching the clock the whole time. Like, no, we only have 20 more minutes. 10 more minutes. Oh no, it's over. Dang it.
Well, I feel like it's, in one sense, I'm like, well, of course it's the last episode. There's nothing left. Like, everything's completely ruined. But at the same time, there are so many things to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like, I could take 5 more episodes if I had to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm glad they're not ending it. I don't want it to be a Dexter where it goes 3 seasons too many and it's worthless at the end. But still, it's shocking that there is only one episode.
One more left. Now, I thought last week played out like a season finale, and then I thought this week kind of played out like a season finale, and then next week will be the series finale, and they've set up all the pieces. We'll talk about it now. So let's start at the beginning. Threw me for a loop out of the gates. You see the vacuum repairman drive up to his business. You think Walt is going to get out of the caravan. Saul g- gets out of the caravan. So why do you think Saul needs to leave town? It took me a few minutes to piece it together, but why do you think Saul left town instead of sweet talking his way and staying in town?
Well, I think there are a couple things going on here, and what I really find interesting is that we're really from Walt's perspective in this episode, and Jesse's for that matter, because they're both prisoners at this point, essentially, and neither of them, aside from the very end when Walt is in a bar and sees television, nobody's watching TV, no one's really reading newspapers, so we don't really get a good understanding of just how major this news is, that this, you know, drug kingpin in New Mexico has killed all these people and has now escaped, and he took his daughter with him at first, and we don't really get a good idea of that until the end when we see that, you know, his partners are on Charlie Rose and outing him and saying that he wasn't as involved with their business as he says he was or as people think. So this is really major national, maybe even international news.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that at first, the reason why it's reasonable to assume that Saul's escaping is because of his clear connection to both Jesse and Walt. And that, of course, he's going to be involved somehow in all of this, and is just freaking out. And then I think also we haven't really figured out what happened with Huell, and maybe Huell's still locked away in that room. And it's just everything points back to Saul. He knows answers that people want. And so I think he really had no choice but to get out of there.
Love his line, "It's an actual store. I thought vacuum cleaner repair was a term of art."
And yes.
So then we have Marie going back to her house, and we see that the house is broken into. Uncle Jack and his men, they obviously took Jesse's confession. And then they're, you know, eating takeout or whatever, watching Jesse's confession. Did you catch what Jesse was talking about when they first turned on the tape?
I didn't. I can't remember.
Jesse was talking about killing Gail.
Ah.
Maybe a bit of foreshadowing, because later in the episode, somebody goes to somebody's house. And he's like, hey,
right. Hey,
don't take this personally. Then they fast forward to the scene where Jesse calls out Todd, and he says he's the one that killed Drew Sharp, the kid all over the news. If you look at Todd's face, he's like, yeah, I did that, Uncle Jack. Uncle Jack is upset, not upset at Todd, but upset that Jesse ratted him out, and he goes to the pit to kill him. And once again, Todd steps in to save Jesse's life.
That's absolutely right.
And then we have the guy saying, oh, you're doing it for Lydia. And Kenny forms a little triangle with his hands, and he says, it's all about this right here. And then Uncle Jack says, that woman's so uptight, she probably has a wood chipper for a coochie.
I love Kenny, by the way. Kenny is, like, really not that important at all. But for some reason, it's hard when characters come in, especially minor characters come in so late, because it's like, wait a minute. We're talking about Gus and Mike, and we've had some heavy hitters do some guest stars on this show, guest star roles. So it's kind of hard when you meet new people so close to the end, you kind of don't care about them, but mm-hmm. I like
I mean, I just think they're great bad guys. I know some people think they're just too simple, but I buy it because I actually know people like that. Not to that extent, I should say. But, you know, guys that are misogynistic, guys maybe a bit racist. And once again, I don't agree with that, but sadly, I know people like this, and they do exist.
Well, here's what I also love about them as villains is that, again, according to like somebody calculating like Gus or somebody truly beyond crazy like Tuco, like a true gangster, these guys they're losers. And what I love is that this late in the game, this is a real company, Walt would have had people, he would have had protection, he would have had staff members, and but because what he does is completely illegal and off the books and underground, anybody that can outwit him or is in the right place at the right time can completely undo him. And what's so tragic is that these losers are like the least threatening, at least at face value, enemies of Walt. They just happen to luck out that he's at the end of his game.
Yep.
And they come in at the right time and they get $80 million or $60 million. And that's what I love. That's why it's just, this is so tragic, because Walt has done everything for nothing. He's left with absolutely nothing, and he was outsmarted by, you know, by fate. He was
I mean, because yeah, you look at Gus, you look at Walt. These guys couldn't even put on the same shoes as Gus Fring or Walter White, yet they are in charge of the business. Uncle Jack says, who gives a shit about meth? We won the lottery. We got all the money in the world. So why do you think he is swayed by his nephew Todd?
I think he just is on a power trip right now. I think that, again, he was just this sort of like wannabe thug, and he's just a bad guy. And I think that he, at this point, they're kind of on top of the world because no one knows to come after them and no one's bothering them. So Todd convinces him, hey, we have a lot of money, but we could make more money. Also, I kind of like this girl. And he's kind of like, all right, well, you're this kid, and you're my kid, and I'm going to look out for you, and let's keep cooking. Why not? Because Jack doesn't have to do anything. He literally sit back all day and count his money. So, and then why not?
So then he convinces Uncle Jack, and the crew go back in to watch Jesse's confession. I believe they call him a big pussy. These guys, mm-hmm. once again, just classic criminals, classic idiots, classic bad guys. And we see Jesse down in the pit. He has the photo from last week of Andrea and Brock. And oh, by the way, there is a paperclip on the photo. And Jesse decides that he is going to unlock his handcuffs. I know there are some skeptics on the internet saying, well, how could Jesse get out of handcuffs using a paperclip? Listen, he has all the time in the world. When he's not cooking, he's down in that pit. So it's not like he figured it out in 5 minutes. He might have taken him a day to figure. Yeah. So then we have Walt and Saul in the vacuum repair shop. By the way, this was filmed in an actual vacuum repair shop. And apparently they did have a room downstairs and they had monitors. So a place like this actually exists. Robert Forster, talk about the greatest matter-of-fact actor. I listened to the Insider podcast today, and Vince Gilligan said that Robert Forster's work in Jackie Brown was why he wanted him for this role. And when they were writing the character, they said, well, we want a guy just like Robert Forster and Jackie Brown, and they ended up getting Robert Forster. He played it perfectly.
We've been waiting to see this guy for a couple seasons, you know, and we thought we were going to see him when the van pulled up to get Jesse, but then Jesse ran away when he found out, I mean, when he put together the fact that Huel stole things off of him. And then we thought we would finally see him at the end of last episode, but in a, I think, very smart move, we really just have to take in how alone Walt is at that moment, so the van drives away and we don't really see the guy in the van. So I love that we finally saw this guy, and he looks like an average guy, but he really holds his own in some of the later scenes.
Yes, he does.
Against Walt. Yeah.
And he says, this isn't my policy, but I've got to bunk you up. And then he shows him his roommate, and it looks like Walt and Saul will be roommates for a couple of days. Walt is
hilarious because Walt and Saul, not too far back, was absolutely terrified of Walt, and I love it.
And I would like to see a DVD extra of the 2 days that they spent together.
I would like that as well. I heard that the Aaron Paul's confession tape in full is going to be available on the DVD.
That will be an extra, and Walt's fake confession will also be an extra on the DVD.
And I will watch them both completely.
I will watch them both, and I hope there's a bunch of other stuff there too. Because I think they're doing some type of behind-the-scenes documentary thing that might end up on the DVD.
Yeah, I believe that they were filming Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul reading the last episode together, and it's a little bit of a documentary about the last few days on set, which I would love to see.
Yeah, so maybe some incentive to actually buy the DVD instead of just streaming everything on Netflix, because I don't think you would get that on Netflix.
Absolutely, and I also think this is a good point to say that I think Jim and I deserve some press copies, because we're going to probably want to do a podcast about that. So anyone out there at Sony or AMC, you know, hit us up and we'll get it.
He's brilliant. Austin is brilliant. Yes, we've been doing these podcasts pro bono, so it would be nice to get
exactly
a DVD. And we would do a podcast for free like we always do. So
on the table.
Back to Walt and Saul underground in the vacuum repair shop. Walt is scheming. He's like, we need hitmen. I'm going to get Uncle Jack. And then Saul has to break it down to him. He reminds Walt that, listen, you're not going to get money to your family. You know, Mike was good at what he did, but every time he tried to give money to his granddaughter, Uncle Sam came and stole it. So then, and his name in the script was Ed, but he doesn't have a name in this, but Robert Forster's character comes down and Walter says, Saul is coming with me. And great matter-of-fact acting, Robert Forster says, well, you guys just, you talk about it.
Yep.
Saul breaks it down. Listen, in a day or two, I'm going to be another douchebag with a job in three pairs of Dockers. And he also says that he'll probably be managing a Cinnabon in Omaha. And then Walt tries to kick it old school playing Heisenberg. He's like, no, we're going to do this, this, and this. And then he starts coughing. He crumples down to his knees. And Saul says, it's over. Goodbye. And I thought that, you know, Walt was going to be more forceful. But once he went down, Saul left the picture. And I guess that is the last we will see of Saul Goodman.
I stood up and clapped and I said, that's a series wrap on Saul Goodman. I think that it is, in fact, it's the series wrap.
And then we will hope, well, we will see him in the prequel, but that's the last we see of Saul, unless they have a sequel to Breaking Bad, or would it be the sequel to the Saul Goodman prequel? We'll find out.
We don't know. Let's see.
We don't know. Skyler, I mean, is it the scene with, it is the scene with Skyler. She's smoking. The police are staking out the house, not well, I should add. And this
was. So before we get there, I think did we miss the part where she's being read her rights and the table with the
yes.
And there's not much to say about that other than I love, and I'm sure everyone made this connection, but I love how it pretty much literally shot the same way as Walt's diagnosis in the first episode, where he's sitting across with his doctor. The music fades up, the dialogue fades out. We hear some echoing, and then she's sitting across from the police in this case. And as with the pilot, when the doctor says, you know, are you hearing what I'm saying? I need to make sure you understand what's going on. The same thing happens here where the cops say, I need you to understand what, you know, how serious this is and what the consequences could be. So it was a nice mirroring.
Yeah, good catch. She says, yeah, listen, anyway. I'm in trouble. I know you want Walt. I don't know where he is. I can't give you Walt. And then the lawyer says, well, rack your brain and give us something. So then we go to the White residence. Skyler is smoking. This scene caught me off guard. I got goosebumps and I was scared in real life because Skyler just walks down the hall, pops in on Holly, and oh my goodness, there's three guys with ski masks in there.
Terrifying.
And I thought to myself, well, is Holly still in there? Are they in the process of kidnapping Holly? Are they going to kill Holly, Flynn, and Skyler? Turns out it was Todd. Todd's trying his best bad guy. Todd is scary. If you don't know Todd, I mean, he's a scary guy.
Just he's terrifying. I loved also, I read an interview with Peter Gould, who wrote and directed this episode, and back in the scene where they're watching Jesse's confession, apparently Jesse says something about how sick Todd is and how he killed this little kid, Drew Sharp. And apparently, if you watch carefully, you can see Jesse Plemons as an actor who really has nothing to do but sit there and watch in this scene. He made a choice to sort of smirk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Todd is just this little kid that sort of never grew up, but not in a cute way, in a completely sick, twisted way. And it's the same way when he was holding the tarantula at the end. He's sort of just like to do bad things, and then he's happy with himself for that.
And even
any sort of conscience.
You just hate Todd because even when he's shooting his gun against Hank and Gomi, just the way he's holding it and the way he's like, ew, I can't stand that guy.
He's such a little twerp.
Now, did you think that Todd was going to kill Skyler and Holly?
Well, what's interesting is that I think the one element of this episode where I sort of thought, well, I don't know if I'd buy this. Todd is such a ruthless guy that I feel like if Lydia said deliver a message that he would have just killed Skyler. And for our sake, that wouldn't really work. The story would be over clearly, and they need Skylar next week in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
But I was definitely surprised that Todd, who never sort of takes the calm way out, he has a little bit of compassion. It seemed like he felt bad when Hank was shot and when Walt was looking so sad, but he's also just completely ruthless. I was very surprised that he left it at a warning.
But he did preface it by saying, "We respect your husband."
I think he loved Lydia so much. I feel like he would have just shot Skylar.
Yeah, and he's very obedient too. And he's like, "That lady that came in the car, well, you're never gonna talk about it, right? All right, say it. You sure? You're not gonna scream?" So Todd sends Skylar a message, and then we have a scene with Todd and Lydia. So it's not Mike meeting Lydia or Walt meeting Lydia. Now it's Todd meeting Lydia, and his grammar, it's horrible.
Oh yeah.
Went really good. We work together good. Yeah, we make a good team.
He's a simple little boy.
And yeah, very simple. And then Lydia says, what did you do? And he's like, well, I'm pretty sure she's not going to talk about you. He wants her to send a message. And how dare Lydia? She wants Todd to kill Skylar with Holly in the room. Remember, it wasn't too long ago when Mike was in the room with Lydia and her child. She was like, just don't do it in front of my kid. Don't do it in front of my kid. But oh, how the tables have turned. Now Lydia is ordering hits on housewives.
She's the coldest one, I think.
Yeah. So then Lydia says, it's okay, we need to take a break. And before she leaves, Todd says, it's 92% and it's blue.
And she likes that.
She decides to stay in the game. Why does she stay in the game?
She's just as messed up as all of them. She wants the money, and she knows that she's going to keep her connections in the Czech Republic happy, and she's going to... When things were going well for her, in that, you know, Crystal Blue Persuasion montage from the season finale, halfway through season 5, and she's, you know, Walt kicking a bag of money to her under the table at the coffee shop. Like, she misses those days, and who wouldn't, really?
Okay, so there's money to be made. She's still in the game. Yep. And then the scene ends with Todd picking a piece of lint off of her blazer.
So good.
That's how Todd rolls. Then we have no longer Walter White, no longer Heisenberg. His name is Mr. Lambert. And Robert Forster says, welcome to New Hampshire. Puts him up in a cabin. No internet, no phone, no TV reception. There are two DVDs of, Mr. Magorium?
Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium.
Now, did you know anything about that movie?
I didn't. Is that the one that Martin Scorsese did, or maybe not?
I looked on the internet today, and it was a 2007 movie starring Dustin Hoffman. So I don't know if that's the one in question, but I found it interesting that it was a 2007 movie, because was that the year that this would have been in the chronology of Breaking Bad, or around that time?
Around that time, because I think the first episode aired in 2008, and it's been about a year and a half or almost 2 years since then. So now in the show, it's about 2009, 2010. So, yeah, I guess time-wise, it would have been relevant. Yeah, I just looked it up. It does have Dustin Hoffman, Natalie Portman. Not sure the significance of it, but...
Yeah, because... Another thing about Breaking Bad is all the hints and clues they throw out, we're supposed to research this. And I'm like, I just don't have the energy to read about Mr. Magorio's Wonder Emporium right now. But I'm sure it has something clever about it that ties back to Walter White. But I'm too caught up, and it's too emotional right now, so I can't go back and watch Mr. Magorio's Wonder Emporium. Anyway, if Walt wants to watch it, it's there. Walt also says, wow, it's $50,000 for a trip to Costco. And the guy's like, listen, there's risk involved here. Robert Forster, well, his name is Ed in the script. I guess he's the guy who makes people disappear. Usually he takes people to the new homes and he leaves, but he is going to make Walt a pet project. And I assume because he is going to continue to make money off of Walter White. And then when Walter White dies, we find out that he may inherit a barrel full of $9, $10, $11 million.
And Walter White also pays him to just hang out because he's lonely. He'll pay him a couple $1,000s, $10,000 to just hang out for 2 hours, and then he talks him down to an hour, and Walt takes it.
And it's so sad because when Ed dumps him off at the beginning, he's like, oh, okay, yeah, I got it. Okay, yeah, get out of here, get out of here. And then months later when Walt grows out a beard and grows out his hair, he can't wait until Ed comes. And like you said, he pays him $10,000 just to hang out with him for an hour.
Right.
Gets lonely up in the mountains of New Hampshire. Walter White, he is between a rock and a hard place. You could say he is in a granite state of mind.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Ed says, listen, you're the hottest client I've ever had by far. And I like the whole scene, the scenes in the cabin, because he says, you're all over this, you're all over that, you're in the newspapers, they're talking about you. I think they mentioned the New York Times later, but instead of doing what they did at the beginning of season 3 after the plane crash, and you have this montage of all the news footage and you get that this is a huge story, we get that this is a huge story from the smallness of a little cabin in New Hampshire. And I kind of like that.
I love that. And I also love that Walt, once again, he did all of this for nothing. He wanted to have the fame and glory, not for being a drug dealer, but he wanted to be known. He wanted his name to be known, and now he can't even watch himself on TV because he is trapped in the cabin. It is a sad, sad, lonely place.
I mean, you think it would make his day if he could turn on MSNBC or Fox News
and
hear everybody talking about Heisenberg and Walter White and what a genius he was. But like you said, he's relegated to Albuquerque newspapers that are a month old.
Yeah.
Then he busts out the Heisenberg hat.
Oh.
So is Heisenberg dead? Has Heisenberg come back to life? Or is the hat just a hat? Does it make him feel good? Does it bring him confidence?
I think it makes him feel good. He has to work up the confidence to leave and to walk down that path and open the door and go into town. And he means business. And it leads to one of the saddest scenes in the whole series.
Don't go there just yet.
Oh, we're not there. Okay.
And I'm happy that they did not use a montage to show time pass while Walt was in the cabin. I just liked it how one day he walks up to the fence and you see he has a big
beard.
And then he's got the hair. In the first episode of season 5, everyone said, oh, he's got the new glasses and he's not wearing a ring, so he's probably having marriage trouble with Skylar. Love how those are explained away in this episode. Ed comes up, he's like, yeah, your prescription probably changed here. Pick a pair of glasses at work. And then Walt is getting so frail at this point, his wedding ring actually falls off his finger and he has to tie it around his neck.
And I love that the writers had to write backwards for that, because they wrote the cold open, the flashboard, a year before they wrote this scene. So they had to really piece together the details in a way that made sense. And I totally bought it. You know, him being completely frail and weak makes sense, and it just makes things even more sad than they already were.
Yep, and Vince Gilligan says they love writing themselves into a corner because it's a challenge. Because I assumed that when they wrote the scene in Denny's for season 5, episode 1, they knew what was going to happen, and Vince Gilligan said, no, we didn't know what was going to happen. We're like, give him this pair of glasses, give him hair, no ring, and we'll see what happens. And they tied it together perfectly for the season finale next week. But right now, let's go to Jesse's escape. And I was amazed by the leap and him grabbing. How did they film that?
Well, that's what's funny is on AMC, on the website after each show, they do a little like 3-minute behind the scenes video. And it used to be that they would do it about the part of the episode that you really wanted to know more about. And maybe they would go over some special effects. For some reason this season, they've been doing the scenes that really don't require any explanation at all. Like, it's pretty clear how the shootout in the desert happened. Like, there were cars and right. fake guns, and they all shot at each other. Don't really care about that. I think the one from last night, they talked about how they hiked up a mountain in Albuquerque or in New Mexico to film New Hampshire and to make it look snowy. I get that. I didn't have to think too hard. I would have liked to see how Aaron Paul stood on a bucket and jumped in the air and hung onto this grate. It was like Cirque du Soleil.
And it never cut. The camera never cut.
Never cut. And I didn't see any wire. I mean, if there were wires, it would look silly. So I have no idea how he did it. And it was amazing.
Because while Jesse was doing it, there was, I think it was in grade school or something, I found a way to shimmy up a wall by using the corners of a wall. And I thought that's what Jesse was going to do. And I'm like, no, Jesse, just shimmy. He jumped, grabs it with one hand, and I don't know how many push-ups or pull-ups Jesse can do, but listen, when the adrenaline is flowing, you can do magical things.
He's a survivor.
He gets out of the cage, and then moments later, he gets caught.
So sad.
And as Matt Jones, who plays Badger, said on Talking Bad, Jesse is weak. And let me just say, how many times, I don't know how many cooks Jesse has had, but he should have scoped that place out. When they take him into the lab, he should say, okay, they've got a camera there, a tower there. Maybe that's a Mike Ehrmantraut move, scoping things out. Walter White always has a nice plan. Matt Jones says that Jesse just thinks with his head. He thinks with his heart. He's like, all right, I'm just going to do this. He thinks on impulse. So he decides to escape.
Well, I think it's the dog metaphor. I mean, he just literally ran in a straight line to escape. You know, he's a survival. He can only survive at this point. That's all that's on his mind, and he doesn't have the capacity to stop and plan things out, or he doesn't want to, and he's just, he's a skittish dog, you know?
Yeah.
And he just ran in the worst possible place to run, I guess.
Because I know a lot of people who love Jesse, and they feel bad for Jesse, and they want Jesse to win, but I think to myself, Jesse has... He's had the chance. He's screwed up. So why can't you guys see fault in Jesse? He's down in a cage for a reason. And if it's for following Walter White, then why did you follow Walter White? If, you know, why did you kill Gale? And remember, and I always take it back to the scene where Walt had to drive over the two drug dealers. And was it season three? If Jesse could have just controlled himself then, and you know, Jesse was upset that they were using kids and whatnot, but if he could have controlled himself then, maybe Walt is still cooking with Gus and he's living a normal life. But you know, things go this way, things go that way, and everyone's
well,
in
that's
this
what's so great about this point in the season is that we have gone from absolutely hating Walter White to wanting him to win again, and we've gone from loving Jesse in the beginning because he's this lovable, goofy, dumb guy, but he literally murders people, and he's a drug dealer, and he makes drugs, just as Walter does. But now we've gone back again to the point where we feel badly for him and want him to win, and we're wanting horrible people to win.
Yeah, because time, it's amazing. When time passes, you're like, okay, I forget about, you know, Walt whistling after Drew Sharp was killed. I totally forgot about that, and I forget about Walt doing this, and I just want him to win now. So then we have maybe the darkest scene in the history of Breaking Bad. It's just sickening because a lot of the characters that have died in Breaking Bad, they deserve it. I don't think Andrea really deserved it. Her sin
Andrea
was
truly, truly collateral damage at this point. And it's just so sad. So sad. And poor Brock, I mean, he didn't ask for any of this.
No. So they go to Andrea's house. Todd says, this isn't personal. And then he shoots her, and Jesse has a front row seat to this. And then Uncle Jack reminds him, hey, there's still the kid. So Jesse wants to die right now. He wants to be shot. But he knows that if he kills himself, if he hangs himself in his little pit there, that they're going to kill Brock. So he has
Brock
to cook meth.
Brock will be truly alone. Yeah.
And the only thing Jesse has going for him right now is he's cooking some killer meth. 92% up to 96%.
He got good. He got really good.
He got.
They picked him up.
And you got to think, Walt's out of practice right now, so Jesse is probably the best in the game at this point in time.
That's true.
So then we have another scene in the cabin. We've talked about this a lot already, how Walt has his beard, he has his hair, he's playing cards with Ed, and he's like, hey, if I died and I wanted you to give this money to my family, would you do it? And he's like, if I said yes, would you believe me? And then Ed says, one king, two kings. That has... We can dig into that, but there's too much else going on.
All the while, he is getting chemo.
Yes.
In a cabin in the woods in New Hampshire that he's delivering to himself and sticking himself with the needle. It's like it's the apocalypse he's got right now.
The bag is hanging off of a deer antler, and Ed says, "Yeah, well, I watched a couple of YouTube videos. Oh, mm-hmm. How the mighty have fallen."
Which I like because it also reflects back on the flash forward, which I guess will be happening again next week, where the guy that supplies Walt with his gun says, I pulled something offline. I pulled the manual offline. It's in the truck. But like, these are just the like small, right. Tiniest crooks in the world, but they are responsible for so many horrible, illegal, life-ruining things, and it's unbelievable. If anybody is capable of doing something so, so bad.
Well put. So Walt, he's like, okay, well, if I die, this money's not going to go to my family. I'm going to stuff all of this money inside of an Ensure box. That's a box of the liquid that Ed gave him to fatten up. He finally goes into town. He pays off someone to pretend they're Aunt Marie. We see the beautiful principal Carmen. She's like,
she must have been excited when she got that call, right? That they needed her back. She's been like, waiting for like 3 seasons.
So Flynn goes into the office and he talks to his dad. We all think that he's going to cry and say, yeah, I miss you, Dad. I miss you. He does the complete opposite. He said, you killed Uncle Hank. Why don't you just die already? And let's rewind for a second. Walt wants to give the money to Lewis. Lewis has become a cult figure on the internet because he's been mentioned for seasons and seasons. He is Flynn's buddy, and Lewis is going to be part of the plot now, it seems, until Flynn nixes the plan.
Right.
And then Walt kind of mumbles to himself, it can't all be for nothing, and then he gives up. He calls.
Now, did you hear on the Insider podcast? Maybe not. Maybe they didn't go over this. But in an interview I read today, they said that they shot that scene, and R.J. Mitty, who plays Walt Jr., actually came to set that day to give Bryan Cranston something a little more real to play off of, since it's such a depressing, horrible moment. And then when the film was shipped out to L.A. or flown out to L.A., an airplane drove over the film. And they had to reshoot the entire phone call in the bar again.
No way.
Yeah, they had already shot it. And he said, Peter Gould said he kept the cans that held the film because they're completely crushed up, so he kept them in his office. And they had to go get Brian. He also said that Brian had to get back into hair and makeup, which I don't know if that's a spoiler for some. I don't know what that was all about. But anyway, and they had to reshoot that scene, which is amazing because not only does that seem incredibly frustrating, but that is just, I think that's Walt's absolute lowest moment, which I feel like I've said a million times, but I think this is the one, and for Bryan Cranston to have to go back into that place and do it again is pretty impressive.
Wow. So he gives up. He calls the DEA. He's like, who's handling the Walter White case? Why, who's calling? Walter White. And then he just drops the phone. He's like, yeah, trace this call and arrest me. He has his last drink before he's going to be arrested. The bartender turning the TV. And by the way, they're watching a hockey game. You could read into this too. The announcer says, turnovers, turnovers, turnovers. Because in sports, when you turn the ball over or you turn the puck over, your team's not going to win. So the bartender flipping the channels, and he stumbles upon Charlie Rose. And Walt hears the word science, and he's like, and then he sees some familiar face. He's like, go back. Yeah, right there. So it turns out that Elliot and Gretchen Schwartz are guests on Charlie Rose. Elliot and Gretchen, they own Grey Matter. They are giving $28 million for drug abuse treatment in the New Mexico area. And then Charlie Rose is like, well, your stock has fallen and people think you're just doing this because your founder is a meth kingpin. And then, break it to him, Austin, what goes down? Knife in the heart.
You see that Walt has become absolutely crushed because he hears his former partners say that he was only responsible for coming up with, he was responsible for the name, coming up with the name.
Yeah.
Based on everybody's, last names, that he is not associated with the company, that he did nothing. They are denying his involvement, and we see Heisenberg's pride come back. It is as if he has called the DEA, turned himself in, and he decides that he's not done. There's more business to take care of. And he's gone.
So what Gretchen does is she takes the defibrillator paddles, she puts them on she unknowingly puts them on the chest of Heisenberg, and she brings him back to life.
What's amazing is that a couple things. This was the only scene in Breaking Bad not shot in New Mexico because Charlie Rose shoots in New York.
Wow.
And I was disappointed that they put the actress's Jessica Hecht's name in the credits at the beginning because I know who she was and that spoiled it for me.
Okay.
So I didn't like that. But also, I saw Charlie Rose interview Vince Gilligan at the Museum of Moving Image in New York when the Breaking Bad exhibit opened a couple months ago. Very exciting night, great lecture and conversation. And Charlie Rose, before the night was over, said, "Now, Vince, what made you decide to put me in the second to last episode?" And you could hear a pin drop because Vince Gilligan said, "Well, Charlie, that's a little bit of a spoiler. You weren't supposed to say anything."
Oh,
so I've been
no.
waiting to see. Ah. I've been waiting to see how Charlie Rose fits into the picture. And I liked it. It was nice. It seemed very fitting that it wasn't, the local news, but that these guys are big time. They run a major company. What Grey Matter does, I will never know.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's big. And I like that it was sort of a nice, quiet, sit-down show that they chose to go on Charlie Rose.
It was perfect. And Walt, too, seeing his two old buddies on TV in the middle of New Hampshire, is like, wow, like, they're talking about me on TV now. And they point out a New York Times article. They're writing about Heisenberg in the New York Times. So maybe that pumps up his ego a little bit, but it crushes him when Gretchen says, "Yeah, that nice guy, that kind guy, he's gone, and he only came up with the name." And go back to all of your old Breaking Bad episodes and look at the love that Walt and Gretchen had. I was listening to a podcast a couple weeks ago, and who's the actress that plays Gretchen?
Jessica Hecht.
Yeah, she gave an interview in. Vince Gilligan gave her motivation, and she said, "You and Walt are engaged, and then things went awry when you had a family gathering." So I don't know if they broke it to the family that they were engaged and things got out of hand, or they didn't respect Walt. So Gretchen was the love of Walt's life. They were going to get married, but something happened when Walt visited her family.
He panicked. He freaked out.
He freaked out. And a lot of people said, I've been listening to podcasts over the last couple of weeks, they said that Skyler didn't really believe in Walt's greatness. So Walt kind of settled and he became this chemistry teacher. But if he would have married Gretchen, they could have done great things. Yes, he would have been Elliot. People would have talked about Walter White. He's a genius. He's running this multi-billion dollar company. That never happens. I, for the longest time, was waiting for Grey Matter to be brought back up in Breaking Bad, so much so that at Comic-Con last year, I rushed in line to ask a question. My question was, are you going to ever talk about Grey Matter again? Fortunately, before Vince Gilligan closed up shop, he said, someone did, the moderator actually asked about Grey Matter, and he's like, yes, we will address Grey Matter. It was brought up when Walt asked Jesse, he's like, did you ever hear of a company called Grey Matter? Well, I sold my share and I could have made billions of dollars. I thought that was going to be the end of it. So this totally threw me for a loop when they brought this up at the end of the episode. Because maybe the gun, well, maybe the ricin, maybe they're for Elliot and Gretchen.
Oh, yeah, we need to talk about that. Before that, the first podcast I did was that episode where Walt and Jesse talked about Grey Matter. And at the time, I complained about how it seemed artificial and it seemed a little hokey to sort of bring up Grey Matter as if it's real and we should all know about it. Sometimes I just have a hard time with, I guess it's TV and film in general, when we're supposed to believe that this fake company or this fake product or this fake thing is so big and so well known, especially when it's in the world of a show or a movie that has elements of our life in it too. Like Charlie Rose is a real show, and the New York Times is a real newspaper, and then Grey Matter, which is not real, is so well known that the founders are on Charlie Rose. To me, it always felt like this thing that happened in season one, and I guess I'm glad that they come back to it, but it's always felt like the most forced kind of callback and connection for me. I don't love it so much.
Okay.
It feels out of place for some reason.
Hmm. Well, here, I kind of like it, because I think that's what got Walt peeved in the first place. That he never got his due for that.
Yeah, it's part of his whole, I could have been a contender, I could have been somebody. Here's the thing about the ricin is that at first when I saw Gretchen Elliott, I thought, oh, well, immediately, of course, they're going to have some ricin in their, you know, coffee pretty soon. But the thing about ricin is that he has to get close enough to whoever he's administering it to because he has to have a close enough relationship. I feel like if he showed up at Gretchen Elliott's house, they'd call the police and run away. So that's why I feel like more and more it might be used on Skyler, because I think he, even though he did his best in last week's episode to throw off the cops and make it seem like Skyler's not involved and has no knowledge of Heisenberg and what he did, now she's obviously implicated, and when they look into the finances of the car wash, she's screwed no matter what. I think he's going to kill her, put her out of her misery, and to protect possibly the money and Walt Jr. and Holly, and she's going to jail anyway, so I think he's going to get close enough to her to slip it in something and kill her.
Oh my gosh, talk about a dark ending.
Hey, this is Breaking Bad.
It is Breaking Bad, but I think we're going to get it. We have to have a little glimmer of hope before it all ends,
I think the hope, the only hope that's left is for these kids, I think.
But they won't have a mother or father.
Yeah, but you know what? They're not going to have a mother because she's going to jail anyway.
Well, we don't know. Maybe Walt comes back and he says, listen, I did it. My wife knew nothing. I'm the guy you want. Leave my wife alone.
When they look into it, though, she's too entrenched. She's too close to all of it. And she laundered money, and she...
I think
she's in a bad place.
Skyler is not complete... Well, she's not innocent.
No, she's not. She's really not.
So what goes around comes around, kid.
Absolutely. I also really liked at the very end of this episode which was this cool musical thing where we finally heard the theme song in full.
Yes.
And it led up to the very end, the button on the episode with the, you know, Vince Gilligan title card, and it kind of faded out there as it does in the opening sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was like this, even though obviously this isn't the case because I think that song always existed as a longer piece, it felt like every opening credit has been a teaser for this moment.
Yes.
You know, like everything's been leading up to this, and now we finally heard the whole song and how it plays out, and how I thought it was so great. And it's like, it's too almost actiony and upbeat and kind of goofy to be like in the series finale, because probably things are going to be pretty dark.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun to have this, the last cliffhanger ever for Breaking Bad.
You're right about that. You're
presumably.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, when the music kicked in, I got up on my feet, and I'm like, yeah, come on, let's do it. I don't know who I'm cheering for, but I felt good. And then we saw the glass. Was the glass half empty or half full? The glass was unfinished. Walt has unfinished business. He's on his way to get breakfast at Denny's. All right, so Adam.
Mr. Lambert.
No. I'm Austin. I'm sorry I called you Adam. Adam was on last week. So here's the deal. Oh, and one more question before we get to our final thoughts. Was Walt's real birthday on his fake New Hampshire license?
That's a great question because it seems like he's only been in the cabin for about a month. So I think that it maybe wasn't his real birthday because it doesn't seem like this would actually be, because it seems like he just leaves and goes directly to Albuquerque. So I don't think so. I don't know.
I think he was in the cabin a lot longer than a month because his hair had to grow out. And his beard had to grow out.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the timeline is at.
So I was trying to keep my finger on the timeline this season. So here's how it is in my head. I may be completely wrong. Walt's out of the business. He's out of the business for about 3 months. And then another month or two passes. So that would be 5-6 months. So I think he's in New Hampshire for a good 5 or 6 months to make it a complete year to his 52nd birthday. If he is truly, if he's truly celebrating his 52nd birthday, or is he celebrating the fake birthday on his New Hampshire license? I don't know.
Well, the only thing that I'm wondering about how it's going to match up is clearly he's bringing the chemotherapy to the little hut. I don't know if he's bringing pills, but we certainly see in the flash forward Walt taking pills in the Denny's bathroom when he buys the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So where did he get those from?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I looked back at some pictures today from that flash forward, and Walt's hair is very nicely, not nicely, but it's certainly combed and put together and doesn't look like it's falling out, whereas what we saw last night was a guy who's going through chemotherapy and living in a hut and losing hair, and it's patchy, and so I'm wondering, you know, does something else happen between now and Denny's, or are we just supposed to believe that it all seamlessly flows together? I'm interested to see where we pick up at the beginning of this final episode.
All right, so let's get in our final thoughts. Let's try to get this under an hour, but this is a very important episode. Like you said, Austin, this is the last cliffhanger we have of Breaking Bad. some chatter on the internet. Will the ricin, and this is a spoiler for anyone, I don't want to spoil it, so if you don't like to hear, you know, what may or may not happen, close your ears. Do you like, can I go for it right now, Austin?
Go for it.
Okay. is the ricin for Walt?
Well, I had wondered that too when I saw the pill. I wondered if when he takes the pill in the Denny's bathroom, I remember thinking, ooh, is the ricin in that pill? Is he killing himself? But then I thought and read up on the internet that ricin is a slow and painful death over a couple of days, and it eats at your insides. And I feel like Walt isn't—he could just shoot himself in the head after he does what he needs to do. So I'm wondering if he would put himself through the pain that apparently is associated with ingesting ricin.
Okay. Some people—I've heard many people actually speculate that Walt is going to save Jesse. The thing is, and I forgot to bring this up on last week's episode because my game wasn't completely down because I was thinking of too many different things, but right now Walt thinks that Jesse's dead. So Jesse is no concern to Walt right now. So do you think that Walt somehow saves Jesse?
I think that he's going back to get Jack, and maybe when he's there he realizes that Jesse's still there too. I also think that it's very possible that Walt is still really upset with Jesse because he, in his mind, Jesse's the reason why this all fell apart. Things were fine until Jesse teamed up with Hank, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. He could be going back, and he stumbles upon Jesse and feels a desire to save him, or he's looking for Jesse too because maybe Jesse isn't dead. I'm not really sure what's going on in his head. I think the only given is that he wants to make sure that Jack and company are so far gone that if that's the last thing he sees, he'll die a somewhat happy man.
Okay. Yeah, that was my prediction at the beginning of the season, was that the machine gun is for Uncle Jack.
Yeah.
Because a guy that bad, he's just got to go. Last night's episode, we got 15 minutes of bonus batter.
Ooh.
at 10 o'clock, I was like, oh, well, it's going to be over. And then I hit my guide button, and it said it wasn't over until 10:15. And I thought, wow. And then I listened
75.
I listened to the Insider podcast, and it was it was the director's cut, and they were afraid that they were going to chop it up, but AMC gave Breaking Bad, and why wouldn't they? They gave them the extra time to play out this episode as it was intended.
So glad.
So next week, is it just an hour episode?
No, it's 75 again. It's another extended episode.
So here's what I hope doesn't happen, and I don't think it will happen. It was the season finale of 3, and in the guide, it had maybe an hour and 15 minutes. And what was going to happen, or it was an hour and a half maybe, and they tagged on a Rubicon preview or a Rubicon... I don't know if they tacked on the whole episode, but the way it appeared in the guide, Breaking Bad was going to be an hour and a half. And then when Jesse kills Gale, I'm waiting for another 15 or 20 minutes of Breaking Bad, and then it just fades to black. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's the end of the season. So I hope they don't mess with the guide, because I need to paste this stuff out in my brain.
Yeah.
So if it's going to be, you know, an hour and 15 minutes, please make it an hour and 15 minutes so I can kind of follow along and know when it's about to end. And then immediately following Breaking Bad, and this is why I don't think they're going to pull anything funny, will be Talking Bad, and they're going to do it live from the event that Aaron Paul is throwing in a cemetery in California with a whole bunch of fans.
It'll be an hour.
Yeah, and then it's going to be an hour long. They're going to have, I guess, most of the crew there. I would assume, like, Bryan Cranston, you know... I would assume all.
I know that Giancarlo Esposito is going to be there.
Oh, that's awesome!
Banks is going to be there. Jimmy Kimmel is going to be there. It's going to be good. It's going to be a party in a cemetery.
And for me, as much as I would like to be there, I wouldn't want to be there because I need to watch in the privacy of my own home without people talking next to me. I need silence. I need to focus, especially on the last episode of Breaking Bad.
People go to bars and they watch at Breaking Bad bars, and it's like, that is the last place I want to be. I'm planning to watch. I have friends that watch this with me, and I've gone to. I am really planning to watch this thing alone. I don't want to ping. I don't want to see anybody. It's me and Breaking Bad. It's a relationship that's coming to an end.
Okay, so finally, I have no predictions on this episode because the whole gray matter thing threw me for a loop. They're going to have to explain that away in this episode. So I don't know what's going to happen.
It's good.
I don't know if we're going to have flashbacks to when gray matter went wrong for Walt. I don't know. You know, are we going to see young Walt again? Are we going to have flashbacks with Hank? I don't know what's going to happen. Do you know what's going to happen? Or do you have any predictions for the final episode of Breaking Bad?
My prediction is that Walt comes back, discovers that Jesse is still alive, and I think that Gus, killing Gus style, Walt and Jesse are going to have to bury the hatchet to come together to overcome something. I think that we're going to see, because I've heard from Vince Gilligan and others that it's a redemptive, as dark as it's going to be, there's something in it that Breaking Bad fans will appreciate and enjoy because it ends in a fitting way. And I think just seeing Walter White die sad and alone and everybody else in much the same way would not be extremely fulfilling for us as fans. So I think we're going to see one last effort from Walt and Jesse. I think Skyler, I don't feel too good about where she's at right now. And then I don't know. Does Walt die of cancer? Is he shot? Does he take the ricin? I don't know. I can't even begin to predict.
But we agree that Walt will die.
Walt will die.
Yeah.
Walt will not.
I think he has to.
It's time.
Yeah, he has to. Yeah. Well, Austin, thank you for doing this again. This was a special hour episode of the Yin's Love podcast. And I hope,
if they're going to extend the episode, we're extending the podcast.
And I hope you didn't have anything else to do tonight, did you?
Nope. Did not.
All right, well, Austin, have fun watching the final episode of Breaking Bad this Sunday.
The Emmy winning, finally.
Yes.
Finally, Emmy winning.
Yes. The best TV show on TV today. And I also have to point out that we did not pay $14 for that episode we saw last night. That was on free cable TV. I mean, we pay a cable bill, but it wasn't $15, folks. We saw that for free. Free
nope.
entertainment. And it doesn't get any better than that.
The best.
Is it the greatest TV show of all time?
It is the greatest television show of all time.
Amen, brother. For Austin Breslow, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see Jens later.
What would you do? Step back from a light of fire.
ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.